But then we move into emotional health, which is where HeartMath specializes. And we teach kids to start recognizing their emotions, which ones help, which ones don't. Give them some simple breathing techniques.
Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us.
We recently launched our very first online course, the Sensory Diet Crash Course. We walk you through how to identify sensory preferences, how to identify when a sensory diet will be beneficial, and we provide you with all the activity ideas to include. We also teach you how to sequence the sensory diet and give you strategies for success. You can find the link for the Sensory Diet Crash Course in the show notes of this episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Sensory Project Show. Today we are chatting with Jeff from HeartMath Institute.
And I didn't know this, but it's a nonprofit organization, and their goal, well, I'm not going to spoil it for you. You have to listen to the episode to hear their goal, but it's amazing. Yes. They are doing some really cool things, and they just want to reach everyone to help everyone, and it's so cool.
Yes. Now, we had a great time chatting with Jeff. There's so many nuggets of wonderful information in this episode. The format that we did is a little bit different. We're kind of all over the place, but in a good way.
In a good way, because yes. We jumped on the call and he just started spewing information, just started giving it to us, and we weren't going to stop him.
No.
So, we've got our secret questions that we normally do, but then in between our secret questions, there's a lot of good information as well. So just stick with it and just listen in and have a great time.
Have an open mind. Have an open heart while you're listening, and
you'll enjoy it. All right. Have fun.
And I did look at your website a little bit and your story, and I love your story.
Oh, thank you.
I love the responsiveness and the innovation, responding to a need, but based on your own firsthand authentic experience. There's a lot of people, as you know, struggling out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's things are kind of getting jacked up, meaning the expectations from schools, the noise in the world, the stress in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it even more difficult for busy parents, for kids. I just did a TV show yesterday, actually. We're launching this new, and I'm just launching in here.
Yeah.
But we haven't formally begun, so. Maybe I should back off.
No, you're good. No, we want to hear it.
But we did a TV show. We're in the Bay Area, so we had a local TV show come and do a program on this new program we're offering, beautiful program for free called Heart Smarts Adventure. And I'll send you the link.
It's please
very
do.
Cool for kids 4, 5, 6 and above. And it's an online live streaming program. And again, I'll send you the link. Teaches kids about the heart, the physical heart, what is it, its functions. We have scientists, a cardiologist, so forth. And then we move on to healthy heart practices like nutritious diet, sleep, exercise, all building the foundation not only for a healthy heart, but also for a healthy lifestyle, as we all know. But then we move into emotional health, which is where HeartMath specializes in. And we teach kids to start recognizing their emotions, which ones help, which ones don't. Give them some simple breathing techniques. And it's all done with interviews, with fun, engaging animations. I mean, it's the digital.
Yes.
That's what kids love. As you know, mm-hmm. That's where they live. That's where we live increasingly. And we brought in a parent who had a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old. And the 9-year-old is frozen with anxiety, panic attacks. Smart kid, but the panic attacks get in the way. School pressure. And it just has meltdowns. Doesn't know how to cope. And I only mention that because increasingly that's what we're seeing with highly sensitive kids. Kids with struggling with disabilities. Or I like the way you frame it, differently abled.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rebranding, a repositioning in a healthy way.
Yeah.
Right? Neural atypical is another way of done somewhat. And just that there's another set of skill sets of coping skills that are used to be peripheral, let the parents take care of that touchy-feely. But now in this fast-moving world we're in, and I don't know how old your children are, but these skills are now essential. Mm-hmm. They need these kind of skills if they're going to cope. The brain won't work as well. Mm-hmm. Their decisions are more impulsive. They're emotionally driven. And it doesn't make for good performance, yeah, as we know, let alone relationships, mm-hmm, which are challenging enough as they are.
Yeah.
And so to add these other elements only makes it more difficult.
Absolutely.
So I'm really, and we've been at this game now for HeartMath for almost 30 years.
Yeah.
Wow. I had originally heard about HeartMath from another gal that we had interviewed on our podcast, and she was just explaining to me heart rate variability and what it can encompass. And the HeartMath device is imperative for our kids to have a visual of what it looks like to relax and self-regulate and be able to improve those emotions independently. And giving them the tools to do that so they can see it. I mean, visuals, we talk about it all the time. Visuals are huge for our kiddos. But giving them the opportunity to see, okay, this is what I have to do in order to feel calm and regulated. So now I have this and I don't necessarily need the tool to do it, but I can do it while I'm at school, while I'm at church, while I'm at soccer practice, wherever I'm at. So I just think that is the coolest thing.
Yeah, it is cool. And we've been at that for a while, that new technology. And of course, technology is, we're just an hour from downtown San Jose, Silicon Valley. So we know our thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. About the craziness. You're in Boise. So you actually flew up to Boise to do some trainings at HP.
Oh, cool.
In their printer factory. This is years ago. So you've got your own little high-tech little industry going on there.
We do.
As
a little
you
bit.
Should. But yeah, it's so fast moving, the technology, and the kids are just so dialed into it naturally, mm-hmm, as we all know. So we're increasingly using technology to meet students, children, where they're at.
Yes.
Rather than the old brick and mortar type approach, where it's more lecture, or here's the information, and you be the sieves, you absorb the information, you do something with it. And now there's a more dynamic, the educational setting's changing a lot. As we know, learning takes place in many different ways for many different kinds of students. Mm-hmm. There's this individualized attention if you're gonna reach students. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just not, there's no one size fits all anymore.
No. I honestly don't think there was ever a one-size-fits-all. That was just the box that they put all the kids in because they didn't know any better.
Yeah. We kind of pigeonhole them all into – this is years ago. The paradigm, unfortunately, has shifted such that new teachers now, they have to learn how to individualize instruction coming out of college. They're really putting a lot of merit on that. Yeah. What are the unique characteristics of this child? What's the different learning style, learning approach to reach this child? Mm-hmm. But still, with all the demands that go on in a classroom, it's almost impossible.
It is.
Yeah, unfortunately.
They're being asked to be heroic at levels beyond what they're capable of.
We do have some secret questions for you.
Oh, I love the best kind.
So the first one, what does your morning routine look like?
My morning routine?
Yep.
Before I go to work?
Yes.
My morning routine consists of making myself some coffee and going into my living room from the upstairs bedroom and putting on a blanket, drinking my coffee, and prepping for the day. Quieting my brain as best possible. I'm still half asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some notes just to remind me what to focus on, what's important. And it's really a time before, because when I get to work, things start speeding up, is typical for everybody. And just things start coming in, even from left field, surprises, whether it's emails, phone calls, projects, meetings, the usual.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I have to get organized inside myself and ask myself, and HeartMath actually teaches us, what are the best attitudes I need to have during the day? And then we teach these really simple breathing techniques, like in between moments, in between a phone call to the next phone call. So that might be 2 or 3 minutes. And I'll just do a simple breathing technique to reset my physiology.
Mm-hmm. Can you take us through those now?
Yeah. Yeah, I can.
If you wouldn't mind, I could use a little bit of that.
Okay. So, and this is for kids a lot.
Perfect. I'm a kid at heart.
Okay. I'm sensing that. So with your thinking brain, it's very active, right? And it's constantly interpreting and trying to make sense of the world. So you want to shift your focus from your thinking brain down the center of your chest. You can even put your hand on your heart initially, almost like you're doing the Pledge of Allegiance, and you're trying to use your hand there as a kinesthetic awareness. Anchor your attention there and not your thinking brain, and just do some gentle but deep breaths. Breathe in for 3 or 4. Breathe out for 3 or 4. We call it heart-focused breathing, away from the thinking brain, getting a brain break here. In for 3 or 4, out for 3 or 4. It's not a panacea, you gotta work it. So we start with heart focus, then heart focus breathing, and then where appropriate, you wanna add something you appreciate, like a child, a pet, a spouse, a favorite memory. For kids, it could be a memory in a park or a sporting game. You want to add that as a layer. It's heart feeling. And you just try to do this as diligently as possible without multitasking, which is where the brain wants to run into, well, I've got to do this and I've got to do that. Mm-hmm. Or what about this? Or I forgot about that. Oh my gosh, what did I do about this? Mm-hmm. And that upsets the focus, the physiology. So it takes practice. It's not a panacea again, but it helps kids, it helps busy adults do these pauses during the day. And we all know about this, neuroscience and best practices recommend it, but to actually do it, do it in the car.
You need to set a reminder on your phone.
Absolutely.
Set a reminder to go off every 2 hours. And
yes, and there's all sorts of apps, as we know, that kind of get that going. But to do it in a disciplined way, in a structured way, especially for kids. And what happens is starts showing up a new baseline, a baseline of behavior, of feeling. It's not magic. I keep putting qualifiers around that. But we work extensively with kids that are at risk, kids with learning disabilities, with behavioral issues. We're in about 3,000 schools in the U.S.,
wow.
A couple hundred universities with our technology, mind you. The technology trains you to get coherent, trains you to be in sync. But then you want to take that skill set, and it is a skill, and start bringing it in a practical way to those areas which are challenging.
So,
for instance, for your population, there might be academic challenges. And they repeat themselves over and over again. They're called histories. So you want to be smart and prep a minute or two in advance. Do that coherent breathing. Eyes open. In most cases, you can't close your eyes and put your hand on the heart. That's just too weird. And you're shifting your physiology as best possible. We have to allow for human life and the unexpected. And then when you do get upset, who doesn't?
Exactly. I just did.
You reset. Much harder to do. That's called resiliency, bouncing back from adversity. Just do that heart-focused breathing to try to reset your physiology, try to reset your emotions. And it might ratchet down an upset from a 9 or 8 to maybe a 4. It's not going to eliminate it because the memory's too fresh or the pain is too much. So they're really simple, practical ways to help.
Okay. So you do this every morning?
Yes, I do. Back to the morning routine question.
Got to bring it back.
Bring it back. Reset. And then when I get to work, I'll try to reset, refresh, just like I had to refresh the computer, the Zoom call, to get my picture on board. We use it a lot with, probably more with computers than we do with ourselves. And I'll do it for a couple minutes, might even be 5 minutes if I have the time. And then I dive into my activities, but I'm also trying to bring back, what was my focus in the morning? In the busyness, it's hard to do with parents because you're just rushing around to go from point A to B to C and get everything ready, and it's nearly impossible. Unless you carve out 10 or 15 minutes in the day to mm-hmm. set the tone. So I try to set a tone for what my day is like. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I get upset like everyone else. But it helps a lot. And then I can kind of see this thread throughout my day. This thread. Sometimes it's a very narrow thread. Sometimes it's so fragile it breaks. And I forget everything what I was thinking about mm-hmm. in the morning. But sometimes I strengthen it and I go back to it two or three times a day. So it brings a continuity of just more composure. Mm-hmm. So I can handle the busy day with all its complexities, especially with meetings. Meetings are hard.
But it gives you that control.
Exactly.
And I like that.
And that's what a lot of people don't feel like they have these days.
And our kids especially.
And kids mm-hmm. especially. They're in these environments where they don't want to be there. They don't function very well. They don't like themselves. They don't like the people they're around. And it's rather bleak. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're seeing such high numbers of depression and anxiety in teenagers. Mm-hmm. But it all starts early on.
Yes.
Where there's failure and disappointment mm-hmm. and anger. And it just stays there. Because sometimes it's just the external environments are not going to be suited to our exact needs. It's almost impossible. Mm-hmm. So the self-control part is big, what you're mentioning.
And so that's kind of what you're teaching with this breathing, is like that self-control and bringing it back to where you feel good.
Yes, but it's not necessarily also being happy, because mm-hmm. happy, we'd love all to be happy all the time, mm-hmm. but that's not possible. Mm-hmm. It's really gets down to resiliency, a deeper composure to bounce back. So you have that self-control, what you mentioned earlier. Yeah, happiness is almost an add-on. We'd love mm-hmm. to all be happy. I think it does yield more choices. So we can actually change our outlook, our picture, mm-hmm. rather than be victimized by what's going down. So there is a likelihood of increased contentment, composure, calm in different degrees. But life is a little messy and sloppy today for most people. It's not an exact formula for being happy all the time. It takes work as a human being to change our attitudes.
Yeah. So it starts with that self-control, and once you have that self-control, then you can find that happiness through resiliency.
Yes, or greater contentment.
Making
peace sometimes is the best we can do, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of hurt out there, mm-hmm. a lot of tragedy, a lot of suffering. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you can do just make peace with the situation. It's almost like you bilocate. Okay, I got this really difficult situation. Parent who's working with a teacher for her child, and the teacher is not sensitive, they're impatient, they're dogmatic, they're just not responsive. And the child does not like to go to school every day. And there's this ongoing struggle between the child not wanting to go to the school, but the parent is obligated to take the child to the school. And it's almost like you almost have to wait for this cycle to pass. There's no solutions. Mm-hmm. So you have to cope with it. Try not to make the situation worse than it already is by adding drama. Like the world is ending. And it takes a depth of character, a depth of heart sometimes to endure through that hardship. And that's where we grow, actually, and we'll rebuild our resiliency. So it's not something to be dismissed. We learn from hardship.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm. You're so good with the words.
I've been doing it for a few thousand years. Thank you.
Just keep talking. I'm just going to soak it all in.
I know. I'm just going to listen. You know. Okay, we'll go back to our secret questions, and then I'm sure we'll keep going. So the second secret question, and you mentioned coffee, so this is good, but how do you drink your coffee?
How do I drink my coffee?
Yeah, do you add creamer? Do you drink it black?
I add creamer. I have a dairy allergy, so I have to use like soy creamer or some other alternative creamer. But it would be too bitter for me to drink my coffee black.
I'm the same way.
Yeah, I know there's some people that do it. Not you, huh?
No, she does.
I drink my coffee black.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, but I buy like flavored coffees.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then have you ever tried to not drink coffee, like take a coffee fast?
No, I've never done that.
I have.
It's hard.
Headaches start emerging.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Feel a little grumpy, but you get over it. It goes through a little cycle.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So next question. Are you a dog person or are you a cat person?
I'm a dog person.
You are.
He didn't even wait for the question to finish.
Yeah. I love it. My wife is a cat person.
Oh, okay.
So do you guys have both?
So I have to yield there.
Do you guys have both cats and dogs?
We don't right now. Our cat just passed about 6 months ago. So we're just giving a little break in the action.
Oh. Get some time.
Yeah.
Dogs are the best.
They you know, it's really interesting. Because they bring a joy, a happiness.
Oh, absolutely.
Their moods, by and large, are always, they're always up.
Yes. We all need
Why
to be more
that?
Like dogs.
I'm just curious. We're, you know, the prototypical cats being kind of aloof. And, if I have time for you, I'll cuddle with you today. But, you know, I got stuff to do.
It would be interesting.
Dogs are like, hi, how are you?
Yeah, they're always excited to see you.
They're always excited
always.
To see you.
It would be interesting to do a research article on, like, brain development with a cat versus brain development with a dog, just to see what's going on inside their heads to create the difference.
Well, you know, we did a study with a boy and a dog.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We hooked a dog up with heart rate variability monitors.
Oh,
you're measuring
gosh.
The heart rhythms of a dog because dogs have emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And we also did this with Josh, at that time the owner of this dog named Mabel.
Oh, I like that.
Josh and Mabel were in one separate rooms. Mabel had long leashes connected to a computer. Mabel was invited into Josh's room. And Josh was told not to touch Mabel, just love Mabel. So he did what we just did. We did this kind of this quick coherence or heart focus technique. And we watched the heart rhythms go from chaotic to these beautiful heart rhythms.
Oh. On the dog.
Not just in Josh, but also in Mabel.
Wow. Interesting.
It was the first example of dog coherence that we saw.
I have goosebumps.
And that led to further studies.
Yeah.
We have done further studies with horses, with dogs. We're probably going to be doing something with a pet company to monitor dogs, not cats. You can't hook cats up to...
No,
I can't do that. But to hook up dogs to these, some kind of strap that measures their heart rhythms. And then you'll connect it to a monitor and maybe see the emotional state of your dog.
That is so cool.
That's coming. I'm not kidding. That's not science fiction. That is coming.
I'm going to need one of those.
Yeah, I know. I think we all would. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Whether you're a dog or not, we could all use it. Yeah.
Yes. That's
so cool.
That's awesome.
Okay, we have two more questions really quick. What one word do you use to describe yourself?
I would say smooth and easy.
That's two, but that's okay. We'll give
all right,
it to
all right.
You.
Let me pull
it. No, we'll give
I
it
would
to
just
you.
Say pretty smooth, pretty calm.
Smooth, okay.
Yeah, as I go about my day, and I work at it a lot.
Yeah.
I've had to kind of tone down. I have a lot of amp because I got to get things done.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I have to kind of intentionally tone that down
because
it'll just overrun people a little bit.
Yeah, right.
So I've had to work on that. Because I have a lot to do, like we all do.
Yeah.
And I just had to kind of slow down on the inside strategically.
Yeah.
Because I've seen the messes it can create with other people. I just overrun them like a V8 engine. And they're in a little tiny four-cylinder car or something like that.
I was going to think of a Prius.
Yeah, Prius, yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
All right, last secret question.
Okay, this is our favorite because we deal with all things sensory. What is your sensory quirk?
my sensory quirk.
Mm-hmm. So we all have our...
Is it quirk or is it quark?
A quirk.
Quirk. Quirk.
A quirk.
Yes.
See if this works. I like to actually walk and to do it for 15 to 20 minutes and just get that. And I'm in the Redwood Forest here.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to just absorb all that energy from nature and just drop whatever I'm thinking and walk and try to be as still as possible. And it just, it gives me this endorphin rush.
Mm-hmm.
Like I actually feel, for the most part, really good doing it. And I'm getting my exercise in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool. I also like to have a good sleep.
Don't
a deep sleep. Because, you know, you get older, you sleep less.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was a teen, I'd sleep for 10, 12 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had these deep crashes and just disappear from the world. And I don't get that anymore. It's hard to do because
mm-hmm.
I'm just trained to be action oriented. So sometimes when I go to sleep, it's almost like there's this sweet feeling in my body. I can't wait to fall asleep. My body's taking over. It's taking over my brain. And I'm just putting myself on that bed into the pillow. And I just, like, I dance off to sleep. It's the best feeling.
Well, and you also...
But I don't always feel that. Sometimes I just got too much going on in my body.
Okay. I was going to say, it sounds like you have a good relationship with sleep. Like, you foster that relationship with sleep. And so many of us can't turn our brains off. But you've trained yourself to be able to have some techniques to be able to turn your brain off and enjoy sleeping.
I'm not perfect at it.
No one is.
No one is, yeah. But... I have to kind of turn off all the digital devices
mm-hmm.
and do a little prep for sleep as best possible. But usually by the time I go to bed, I'm pretty tired. My body's tired. Like you say, the brain's active.
Yeah.
So I have to kind of try to turn the volume in my brain down. Not turn it off. That's not possible.
Right.
Turn the volume down. Because I know that if I don't get enough sleep, I've had plenty of experience like all of us. Then I'm going to wake up and my morning prep's going to be compromised. And I'll just kind of sleepwalk through the day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Half functioning, but it's not a good day. It's best possible. But then you have to make peace with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why making peace with challenges is best possible, not to have a downward spiral of disappointment and frustration and, oh boy, my days, I got off on the wrong side of the bed. Here we go again. And I try to reset or be at least neutral or do the best I can. And that's sometimes all we can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a perfect day.
I just like I wrote this down, making peace with challenges, because mm-hmm. I love that. That's a quote.
Yes. Well, you know, it's like, I don't know about you, but whenever there's a challenge, right, and it could be a healthcare crisis with a family member, like I have a family member now who has dementia. We know what that cycle's like.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be a financial issue or a relationship issue where there's constant arguments and it just doesn't feel good, or struggles with a child who's unhappy. And it's just not going away. And so that's where we have to kind of find some degree of peace or composure or get the big picture, because all these challenges have a shelf life,
mm-hmm.
a cycle.
Yes.
In most cases. I mean, a family member with dementia, no.
Mm-hmm.
That's ongoing.
Sure.
But then you have to kind of reshift your attitude. It's like, okay, what's the best approach here? What's best for me? What's best for the environment? I'll get out of my own little tantrum and the world's gone south and the world's over and it's terrible and horrible and I have to live with this. And there's these little quiet joys to be found in the day,
mm-hmm.
like having black coffee or coffee with some kind of creamer, right?
Yes.
And you look forward to it. It's like
yes.
you have that moment.
Yes.
Ah, it smells good.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of those moments to be had during the day
mm-hmm.
that kind of build up our resiliency and build up our outlook. But we have to choose them, and then leave behind some of that other noise. Yes. It's hard to do.
Yes.
But it takes practice, but it's so worth it. And look what we bring to our kids as a result. Oh, we bring ourselves rather than part of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want more than anything.
It is. Well, and it's teaching them how they can do it as well.
Modeling. Huge. Yes. The transfer.
Yes.
That's what I do sometimes with parents with kids, because the kids are like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do some stupid breathing technique. Right. Why would I want to do that? That's dumb.
Yeah.
So you do it, but you don't make a big show of it. Mm-hmm. You do it quietly, more of a side door approach rather than the front door, because the front door is blocked, or even a back door approach. And they watch you not get upset in a situation where predictably you might get upset or other people are getting upset. And you hold that composure and you're modeling it, and they're quietly absorbing that. They go, what are you doing there? Mm-hmm. I need that. Not that they're consciously thinking of that, but you do that enough, you have a kind of a quiet calm or a composure or a humor or a big picture perspective rather than the world's ending. That stuff does get passed on.
Yes, it does. Okay, so we've done a lot of talking about all of these ideas, but can you tell us more about who you are and how you got started on this journey?
It's kind of like a rags to riches thing. And and this is literally true. This is like going back in the 80s where I had my job and everybody had their job. I was a school teacher and met a bunch of people, different people. Some I knew, some I didn't know from different networks. And there's this guy named Doc Childrey, the founder of HeartMath, really cool dude who moved from North Carolina and just loved the Redwoods. We all kind of did. There's something really cool about the Redwoods. And we said, you know, the world's kind of a stressful place. That was back in the 80s, so you can imagine what it's like now. And we just said, you know, let's start this institute based upon the heart. The depth of the heart that we all know, not necessarily the Disneyland soft, syrupy heart. And so we kind of all went in, and it was a leap of faith. And I happen to have an educational background. Some people were engineers, so hence our technology. Some were business, some were health, some were good at facilities. And we created this institute called the HeartMath Institute, a nonprofit. And it took a while, a lot of sweat, a lot of tears, a lot of blood, as they say, some capital. Mm-hmm. But we've been at it for 30 years. And it's just like kind of you look up at the stars and you go, well, I guess I have a big dream here. Might as well dream big, right?
Yep.
And not that it's been a smooth ride by any means. It's just life. Zigs and zags and disappointments and surges and then declines. But we've stayed with it. And so it's like the original vision is carried forward. The spirit of it is still here today. And we've grown a lot, as you can imagine. We had a lot of employees, but that's kind of where it all started from when I was in my 20s and 30s.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so then tell us more about the HeartMath Institute and what the goal of it is.
The goal is actually to kind of put out more heart. Now that sounds rather simplistic and something you'd see in a Hallmark card. But it's really, you know, because we're so brain focused. There's so much noise. There's so much occupying us in the day that we've forgotten kind of the depth of the heart in its most traditional sense, what the heart means. Again, not some just syrupy sweet thing. But if you look in the Webster's dictionary, there's the first definition of heart is the pump that beats inside us. Second definition is who we are, the depth of who we are. That's what we mean by the heart. So us being more of who we are to our best potential, which again sounds like a big fat cliche, but how do you actually access that in the busyness, in the noisiness, with all the stress, with all the crisis going on, in each moment to the best possible way. That's what we're about. And so that's why we work with hospitals. We're really, really big on hospitals right now. I think there's probably one in Boise that we work with. All the Kaiser Permanente hospitals in Northern California, a lot of university hospitals. It's one of our fastest growing areas. Schools, thousands of schools where we bring our technology and our classroom programs. Police and fire. Mm-hmm. Big growing area for us for all the obvious reasons. For the first responders, because they are really challenged in their jobs to be composed and not take all that stress and trauma home with them, which can ultimately affect their relationships, their decisions, their health, what they eat, so forth. Professional sports stars use our technology. Some really big sports technology people. The Kardashians use it. I don't know what degree, but I know that's, you're probably
that
Kardashian
was a big
fans.
Thing. So
that's, I'm joking a little bit. But they're doing their thing, okay? So it just in this world we're living in, as we kind of tumble forward into these crazy fast moving times, we just need, it's become a priority, a kind of a global priority, to have more kindness, more composure, because it's such a polarized world. There's so many crises breaking out. There's so much finger pointing going back and forth. And that's almost become a way of life. Mm. Republicans versus Democrats. The one religion culture against another religious mm-hmm. culture. Or at schools, kids with disabilities versus neurotypical kids. Mm-hmm. The differences, we want to amplify these differences between mm-hmm. each other. And yet we have this thread of heart, a depth of character. When it all comes, what's all said and done, we're very similar. We're more similar than we are different.
Yes.
Whatever we look like, however we function. So how do we find that place in greater ratio?
All right, I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the technology and heart rate variability?
Yeah. So the technology uses ear sensors or finger sensors, and you put a little ear sensor. I have one right here because I used it this morning. I use it every morning.
Okay.
You can see that, but I use a little ear clip. This is for the phones, the iPhone. You can't see it very well, and it plugs into your iPhone
okay.
or iPad, or there's an Android version. And then you download the software. It's called Inner Balance on the App Store or the Android Store. You have to buy the device, which mm-hmm. can be expensive, $129, $159. It's what it is. But then what it does is it measures your heart rate variability. And what's heart rate variability, or HRV? It's one of the fastest growing areas in not only heart health, but also psychology. And among biofeedback devices, what is heart rate variability is that your heart varies in speed from beat to beat. It's not a continuous lub-dub, lub-dub, lub-dub. It has to vary in speed. So we are more dynamic and responsive to life. So if you have to climb up a set of stairs, you want your heart rate to speed up. You don't want it to be all at 75, 76, 77, 76, no. And in fact, if it stayed at that, that is actually a recipe for poor heart health, because the heart needs to speed up to pump more oxygen into your bloodstream. So you can use that oxygen to get your body prepared for movement, for motion. But you also want it to slow down. Mm-hmm. So it varies in speed from beat to beat, from beat to beat. And kids have the greatest variability, the amount. Their heart rate can go from 59 to 83 in a matter of seconds. And as we age, it gets less and less. That's called aging. Less heart rate variability, right? And so that's a big topic these days in a lot of different circles, a lot of research circles. What we're excelled at is we look at the pattern of heart rate variability? Is it chaotic, like when we're frustrated, or can we make it more even, like some neat peaks and valleys? We call that coherence versus incoherent. And that's coming from the heart. That's the heart rhythms of the heart. We studied that. And those signals actually go up to the brain. We call it cortical inhibition or cortical facilitation. Big words there.
Big words.
But we teach kids this, so they understand a little bit of the neuroscience.
Mm-hmm. So why is it important for our kids to have good heart rate variability, or to at least be aware of it?
Research has shown the more variability you have, the amount, let alone the pattern, your brain works better.
Okay.
Because the signals going up from the heart to the brain facilitate the brain. If you have those chaotic signals going from the heart to the brain, then as it trickles up to the thinking brain, the emotional brain, the brain is going, hey, there's some chaos here. Try to do an algebra problem when you're angry.
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. Try to make a good decision when you're frustrated.
Right.
Or what's it like when you're anxious? Mm-hmm. How well do you see the big picture of things? Or are we zeroed in on one problem and we can't shake it off? It's like flypaper on us. We just can't shake it off. Mm-hmm. And it just stays with us. There's like this dark cloud attached to us. And it affects our outlook, our decisions, our performance, and ultimately our health.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
You're good.
So I was going to say, these kids who are high anxiety, they're in fight or flight mode, so they have a really high heart rate. And so then if they can see that it's there and then use, you know, your techniques to bring that back down to base levels so they can feel better and make better decisions. That's kind of the goal there, right?
It is. And it takes practice. Okay. You just don't press a button because they've got a certain neural science. They've got some kind of a foundation of neurophysiology that's operating in their system. So we work increasingly with people with trauma. Mm. We're in California. There have been a lot of fires, disasters, school shootings. You know the drill. So the trauma lands on their nervous system, it's in their brain, but it's also in their nervous system, so it's unconscious. Mm-hmm. So you got these wires going up and down your body, down the back and up the front of the chest, and that's the autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, and we get deep into research and all that. But we look at the signals going back, up and forth, down the back and up the chest. And when you're in trauma or high anxiety, there's an imbalance there. You got much more the fight or flight, the sympathetic, or shutting down. And that affects their brain. And you just don't get, the brain is not as opened up as much. Mm-hmm. So you can't use these wonderful faculties we have, you know, our neocortex, for foresight, for thinking, for planning, for analysis, because there's just too much turbulence underneath in the body and the emotions. Yeah. So this is just not opening up.
So can you use this technology with any child?
I think so. Yeah. I would say 4 and 5 is maybe too young.
Okay.
Like maybe a decade ago, I thought maybe 8-year-old was about as low as you can go because you have to be able to focus. But I've been contradictory time and time again. Here's 5-year-olds using it in kindergarten classes.
Okay.
So they don't have meltdowns. So, and it's not a panacea. I want to emphasize that. Just like with any good technology or tool, you have to use it. And it's all about, where can you transfer the skill set into real life?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Otherwise, you compartmentalize it. You isolate the experience. It's like going to church on Sunday. You feel better, but then you sin the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't bring forth what you learned in Sunday service into important life decisions or relationships the rest of the week.
Well, that's our goal with occupational therapy, is teaching our families and our clients how to carry over the skills that we address in therapy into everyday activities.
In all environments, mm-hmm. Yes.
In all environments, yes. And if you don't anticipate all environments,
mm-hmm.
then things go south.
Mm-hmm.
And then that can disrupt everything you've taught. And it undoes all the valuable information and skills.
Yeah. So then my question, you have, you know, say someone goes and they buy the equipment, the technology, and they download the app and they use it and they can see their heart rate variability. What do they do next?
They keep practicing on it. It has four different challenge levels. Okay. It's going to get more gamified.
Okay.
There's more games coming for kids, obviously, but also for adults.
And this is what you see.
But the idea is to do it daily. So you're building this new baseline.
Okay.
You're planning this memory, this kinesthetic memory. What does it feel like to be composed and coherent compared to agitated?
Mm-hmm.
And you start seeing these contrasts. And the others, you want to start fostering that coherence, that composure more and more, even if it's in little bits and pieces. So if someone's living at an agitation level on a 1 to 10 scale at an 8 or a 9, and that's constant, and we've seen kids whose heart rate baseline is 125 beats a minute.
Wow. Whoa.
What's going on?
That's crazy.
That's someone with trauma.
And how can they function?
They can't.
No.
Exactly.
Not at
so
all.
So to kind of ratchet that down from an 8 or a 9, you can't get to a 1 or a, it just, that's be a miracle. Not that they can't occur, but to maybe a 4 or 5 so they can cope in an improved way.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not over-promising and under-delivering. You've got to find, you got to be practical and concrete, as you are, obviously,
mm-hmm.
in your work. You're having face-to-faces and bringing strategies to your families and kids in need. And it takes time to shift a baseline or shift a behavior or add these new elements of success.
I think I need to try this.
Me too.
Yes.
I know. We need to order one and use it with our kiddos at work.
I'll send you a link.
Okay.
For a little discount. You could even share this with some of your lists, your group.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll send that to you. Plus, I'll send you this new program, Heart Smarts Adventure, which
yes.
is very cool. That's free. It's called the 100,000 Coherent Kids Initiative. We just launched it.
Awesome.
And it's just share it freely.
Okay.
And I mean that in the most generous way.
Yeah.
Because we're a nonprofit. That's part of what we do.
Mm, that's amazing.
Let's talk a little bit about what's next. We talked about the dog sensors, but what's coming next for HeartMath and for you professionally as well?
Well, we're a growing organization, so we have we have a lot of different initiatives going on. I can't keep track of them all, but for ourselves, we got a CDC grant, Center for Disease Control, with University of Chicago, University of Texas Medical Branch, where we're going to be launching this in the fall with a bunch of middle schools, seventh graders, thousands of them. And we're going to take our program Smart Brain Wise Heart, that's for upper elementary, middle school, and we're going to be using some of our technology in a big intervention with all sorts of pre and post measures. And there's a lot of organization to get that going. And we're also going to have a parent component.
Mm.
We're contracting with a psychologist out of Chicago. There's also another initiative in Australia. We all know about Australia and the massive wildfires there and the devastating play out there among families and kids. And so we're going to be working with an organization called Beautiful Minds in Australia. They do a lot of preteen and teen training on self-esteem, body shame, and the Australian YMCA.
Okay, very cool.
And that's a new initiative, an online initiative to get things going there. And I have to create another curriculum for kids 7, 8, 9. How old are your kids, by the way, if I can ask?
We work with kids from birth to 21.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, so the way I operate is I will I'll have these kind of these casual focus groups where I'll come up an idea or two, and then I bounce it off parents that are age specific to the program being created. Mm-hmm. And I ask them candidly, what do you think? Would that work or not? So there's another one coming down the line after. That'll be a year or two to create.
So you're working on the curriculum for those programs?
Yes. Cool. To a lot of research studies.
Yeah.
Client care, lots of schools. So there's just, it's in the years we've been around, it's just hit that next level, that next threshold of busyness. Because the need, the world is very hungry.
Clearly, yeah. There's the need.
Hungry and a yes. need now. Tools and strategies to.
Mm-hmm. You're filling that gap. And you're doing a good job with it too, and making it affordable and yes. available to everyone.
That's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I love it.
So good.
How can people find you or reach out to you, work with you, find your...
I'll send you a link.
Okay.
And they can shoot me an email.
Okay, we'll put that.
I might pass it on to my colleague.
Okay.
Depending on my busyness.
Yes.
I have a wonderful colleague here who helps named Sierra Turner. That'd be the way.
Okay, that sounds good.
And we'll put all of the links in our show notes for this episode too. Mm-hmm.
Great.
You've given us so many gems of wonderful information, but do you have any last minute advice for maybe parents of kids with special needs?
Patience. That what you see is not what will necessarily be. Mm. That they're in the developmental cycle, even if there's disabilities, whatever it is, and there's a lot of them that are diagnosed, where it's interfering with that child's success. But beneath that disability, there's a heart of gold someplace. Mm-hmm. There's a depth of character that ultimately, with love and care, will shine forward through the disability. And in fact, in some cases, but it takes a lot of work, those disabilities can be transformed into assets. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds rather pie in the sky, but there's a potential there.
Yes.
But it takes sustained energy and help. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of find that inner quiet inside yourself to assess the situation, the relationship. Who is this child? Beneath the physical, beneath the mental, what's the spirit of this child? Who is this child? And every parent has seen their child in that highest light, if you will. Not that the others aren't real, but you have to train yourself, like I train my prep for the day. I have to see, okay, what's the best Jeff I'm going to bring forth to the day? Not the worst Jeff. It takes practice. We're all human. And you have to, and I would say also, so patience and compassion for yourself and your child. Lots of compassion. We need that these days. Mm-hmm. Breathe in that compassion.
Wow. Those are great.
We need to put that on a poster board.
Yes.
There are Hallmark cards that
did you write them?
A lot of those out there.
Did you write those Hallmark cards too?
No, I didn't. Kind of been a Chinese fortune character.
Oh, writer. There it is.
You know, they have professional Chinese fortune cookie writers. So.
There you go.
Wonderful. Well, Jeff, it was so, so wonderful to meet you and just to hear your wisdom and all of the things that you have done to help these kids and families and adults.
Yes.
Everywhere.
It's amazing.
I had a blast. You kept it interesting. You're fun. You've got that fun contagiousness about you. So it's not just a straight information download.
So do you.
And I like your secret question.
Well, before we hop off, do you have any questions for us?
Where are you going with this, with your podcast? Oh, we're turning the tables, aren't we?
We are, yes.
Well, we have a membership website. Mm-hmm. that is specific for parents and therapists and educators.
I just feel like with the podcast, it's information that isn't out there. And so much of what we talk about is not talked about. And we want parents to start young. We want parents to get this information for their children to just be aware of everything that encompasses child development and share what we've learned as therapists with other therapists, with to get this movement into schools and to get teachers on board to say, you know, it's not just a fad. Sensory isn't just a fad. It actually makes a big difference when you put your sensory goggles on and you look at your students with that perspective. The classrooms will be happier. Kids will be happier, more content. So,
yeah, well said.
And with the podcast, we're able to reach more companies like you and more people to provide more information, but then even for ourselves to learn more.
Yeah.
It's a big world with a lot of resources. So yes. I wish you nothing but continued success. And again, it's been a lot of fun. You kept me entertained the whole time. So I thank you for your kindness and your caring.
Yes.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
You bet.
I could listen to him talk all day.
I wrote this one thing down that he said, that making peace with challenges. Mm-hmm. And that's so important, is that, yeah, we're all going to have challenges in our day, in our life, but we need to make peace with them because, you know, they're not going to last forever.
Yes.
And we will have those happy moments again. And so just having peace. I mean, okay, you guys, I have a peace tattoo
on my shoulder
that says, be calm in your heart. And it's about having peace in your life, even through the struggles. And so that really resonated with me.
Yeah. Well, I just feel like I learned so much from that I can implement into my therapy practice, as well as just my own life. And I feel like every morning I'm going to start doing these practices to just find that resiliency and control and contentment to be able to say, you know what, I can handle whatever comes my way. Mm-hmm. There's going to be challenges, but I have these tools that I love trying these things and then teaching my kids these same techniques because I can say, hey, I do this and this helps me.
Yep. And one of the big things too, is he mentioned gratitude. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I do, is part of my journaling is 5 things that I'm grateful for. Mm-hmm. And I think that's huge because that really does help you to realize how good your life is when you can find those things to be grateful for.
Instead of always focusing on the negatives and all of the challenges that you're going through.
We're going to implement that breathing that he talked about, mm-hmm. where you put your hand on your heart, breathe in for 3 to 4, out for 3 to 4, think of something good. Implement that into our daily routines.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge you to do it.
Yeah. And we'll hop on Instagram and share this with you guys. And maybe you can join us and we'll set some reminders to incorporate this into our daily routine. And, you know, maybe like Jeff was talking about, you don't talk to your child about it, but you are present doing this with them nearby. Mm-hmm. And they watch you implement these strategies and you model these great opportunities for self-regulation, mm-hmm. and who knows, it might help you out more than you think it will.
Well, and I was just thinking too, like in that moment of chaos, if you just stop and you say, I'm going to breathe for a minute, and you do it and your child's watching you, and then eventually they're going to start doing it with you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, all right.
Okay. Well, if you guys want to hop on over to iTunes and leave a review, that would be fantastic. We know Jeff would appreciate it. We would appreciate it.
Make sure you check out all the links in the show notes and on the blog to get all the things that we talked about. Well, we'll do it again next week.
See you guys later. We are so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.